Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines, we call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to bed in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
For your transgression, you receive the atomic boot to the ass.
Thud!
Oh, boy. That sounded bad.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Oh, hey, 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 king, she fills the terrible and the knights of the round table.
Awima wa, awima wa, awima wa, awima wa, awima wa, awima wa. nothing happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. The West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway late nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beech nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello, everybody. It's old King Shaziz the Terrible here, sitting around the round table waiting for some of the night to show up. Say, I don't know if any of y'all had this problem, but the doggone Flash player on Internet Explorer just kind of like stopped and don't work anymore, and I figured it all out. Doggone Google's trying to force everybody into using their Google Explorer, and so, you know, the Chrome version. So I guess that's one of their ways by which to kind of phase out. I also noticed here on Skype that it said there was an advertisement saying XP will no longer be updated. So I guess all of us XP users out here are going to get phased out before too long. So I got to find me a different platform that all my older software will work on. Yikes. Yeah, that's a crazy world we live in, man. I mean, I don't mind so much them spying on me. It's just, why can't they just leave my software alone and just spy on me with the old software? I guess they just want to make sure that they get total control over the internet, pretty much. That's pretty much what Google's doing, buying up YouTube, buying up everything under the sun. I'm not even so sure that they don't own the Adobe Flash players and all that kind of stuff. But either way, you know, that's just another one of the hurdles. If I'm not mistaken, this is Knights of the Round Table number 90. We're 10 away from 100 shows. That's pretty cool. Anyway, I'm just like in the twilight zone today. I get up and I'm trying to get everything situated, and my Flash player ain't working and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, I remember Rick and Annie had this problem yesterday with their Flash player. And so I kind of overlooked that yesterday. I just thought it was a problem on my side, but apparently it's a problem on everybody's side. So, with that said, okay, hold on. Sorry about that, folks. We weren't on Wake Radio yet, so I'm going to start this. All right, good, yay, okay. Boy, this is making for a really interesting show here, isn't it? Anyway, like I said, man, these companies and corporations out there, they're killing the little guy, man. They're, you know, all these folks that's got older computers like myself, you know, I've got a bunch of older computers. They all run off of XP. I'm probably going to have to go to some form of Linux or something like that that all my software will work on. But then I got the crazy task of trying to get all the settings back and all the drivers to everything. Ugh. That's what I need. I need a platform by which there ain't no constant updates that you got to worry about. It's driving me insane. Anyway, while I wait around for some of the knights to come on here, I think I might just throw on another quick tune, get my brain back together. My coffee hasn't kicked in and all that kind of jazz. So, do-do-do-do-do. Boy. All right. You know what? I just don't know, man. This world is just driving me literally insane. I'm going to throw on some Creedence for a second. Stay tuned, everybody. Peace and love.
Yeah. sweet almond. myself in times of trouble. Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see, there will be an answer, let it be. Let it be.
Well, it slips away, and all your money won't another minute buy. Dust in the wind, all we are is dust in the wind.
Dust in the wind.
Dust in the wind.
Hello, everybody. That last song was so freaking depressing. I got to play something else here. Hold on a second. Try this one out.
For me. Hakuna Matata.
What?
Hakuna Matata. It means no worries.
Hakuna Matata. What a wonderful phrase.
Hakuna Matata. Ain't no passing craze.
It means no worries for the rest of your days.
It's our problem-free philosophy.
Hakuna Matata.
Hakuna Matata?
Yeah, it's our motto.
What's the motto?
Nothing. What's the motto with you?
You know, kid, these two words will solve all your problems.
That's right. Take Pumbaa, for example. Why, when he was a young warthog.
When I was a young warthog.
Very nice.
Thanks.
He found his aroma like a certain appeal. He could clear the savannah after every meal.
I'm a sensitive soul, though I seem thick-skinned. And it hurt that my friends never stood downwind. And oh, the shame!
What's a shame?
What a change in my name!
Oh, what's in a name?
And I got downhearted.
How'd you feel?
Every time that I...
Hey, Pumbaa, not in front of the kids.
Oh, sorry. Hakuna Matata, what a wonderful phrase. Hakuna Matata, ain't no passing craze.
It means no worries for the rest of your days.
Yeah, say it, kid.
Yeah, I hope that one was a little bit better. I'm still waiting around for some of the knights to show up there. Seems like my buddy Cultus is working on his atmospheric motor and having a little bit of problems with some friction, so he's getting that all worked out. So, anyway, duh, my brain just stopped again. Guess what? Oh, man. You know, some days it just doesn't pay to get up out of bed. It's just one distraction after another. So, with that said, let's try this one more time.
Listen.
Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
I say, this is really getting monotonous, man. You know, it's just, this world is just nuts, man. It's going crazy. I wake up in the morning and I think, all right, here we go, man. I didn't even read the news today. Hey, yay, saved by the bell. How's it going, brother?
Good, your morning.
Oh, man, I tell you what. I'm just crashing and burning today.
You flying solo?
Oh, yeah, so low I hit the ground. Yeah, just, I don't know, the first distraction came when my doggone, I went to get on my Knights of the Round Table page there, and my Adobe Flash thing's gone, you know, it's got a little picture down there. You know, the old Internet Explorer, they just don't, when they do the updates, they don't do updates for older systems, and so eventually that older system gets phased out of existence.
Yeah.
And so I guess I got to get up with the times and buy a brand new computer. But then again, I got to figure out whether or not this software will run on a brand new computer. So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's a pain.
I guess I'm getting phased out, man. That's what happens when you get old. They put you out the pasture.
Yeah, they just want you to consume more. They being, you know, the big corporations just want you to buy another computer. Buy a brand new computer. Buy a brand new software.
And it's nuts, too, because Google's pretty much buying up everything out there. Yeah. And like, you know, Internet Explorer, they're basically forcing you out of old Internet Explorers and stuff like that if you want to use Flash players and stuff like that. Now, Google Chrome works fine as far as getting around the web and all that, but it has a problem when you play in video or audio on my side, maybe because of a memory deal, because you know they're all constantly scanning what you're doing and spying on you. It causes the audio to skip on the player.
Yeah.
And on YouTube players. And it drives me freaking insane. You know, nobody wants to listen to a video where it's like, and then it stops and starts. I mean, it shakes your brain loose. You know? But what do you do, man?
Just do the best you can. That's all you can do, right?
Well, you know, I could go to Linux. But then again, I learned Linux a long time ago. I got the old SUSE Linux program that's, you know, was pretty good back in the day. But I don't know whether or not it'd be compatible with today's stuff. You know, I actually have server software that's old Linux, and so who knows? I might have to give that a shot on a computer and see if it works before I shift over. But at least with Linux, you don't have to worry about a lot of things.
Yeah, and then you can get help from people for free a lot of times.
Yeah, it's just these knuckleheads with Microsoft and Google and all them. They're out there having their doggone tech wars. And
yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, and they're killing us in the process, man. I don't care if they spy on me. I mean, I ain't got nothing to hide. I'm not going to no sites that I'm not supposed to be going to or anything like that. So, you know, what I say to you guys, I would say to them to their face. So, you know, instead of them wasting their time destroying my software, they could just come over here and sit in the lab and, you know, we'll talk.
I don't think it's like that. They just want to be able to...
They just want to be able to look in without you knowing. See, it ain't no fun if you know they're looking. Spy versus spy stuff. We know they're looking.
Yeah, that's a great comic, though.
Yeah, it is.
I think you just had a creative idea. You should just make a new one called Tech versus Tech.
Yeah.
Make it go viral.
Well, who's going to win the war out, Microsoft or Google?
It's no one ever wins any war, right?
It's hard it's hard to say because they both got a lot of money. But in the meantime, it's the collateral damage such as us and our old computers that are paying the price for their knuckleheads.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd like to go over there and knock on the door and hit them in the head with my computer and run off. Say, you want to spy on me? Here's everything. Crash. I've had it. I'm going back to snail mail. I mean, what do you do, man? You can't do nothing. I mean,
you could get like a 56K modem, you know, and run Linux and just dial up on a private internet server.
Well, I think I want to do better than that. I want to go get one of those old TRS-80s or a Commodore 64 with a little 8-baud modem. Dial up and scree and bleed until I drive them nuts. Because I want in, but it ain't fast enough to get in.
Yeah, they just kill your connection over and over.
Yeah.
Make sure you didn't bog down the system.
But there's ways around it. I mean, you go get an old 286 and an acoustic coupler, and you can go to any, if you can find one remaining payphone around somewhere, you know. And
those got phased out fast. I don't see a payphone practically anywhere.
Yeah, I wonder if there are any exist. If anybody out there knows of a payphone somewhere, let me know, because I'd like to go use it once.
Yeah, take a picture
of it, because it's like a dinosaur. I get one to put it in my house and charge my kids to use a phone. He said, what do you do with this little wheel, Dad? Well, you put your finger in the hole where the number is, and you roll it around and let it go back, and then you dial the next one. Well, that's kind of stupid. Hey, that's the way they did it back in the day. Yeah, in the older days, all they did was like tap a few times and tell the operator, "Ah, yeah, can you connect me up to George over there?"
Yeah.
Everybody knew everybody's business, and the nosy operator lady was listening in on your conversation.
Yeah, the entire time.
Yeah,
so just open.
So as soon as you got through telling the secret, you get out in town and everybody's looking at you cross-eyed and like, what's going on? Well, the operator lady done told everyone in town what your business was. So, see, spying was even going on back in, man. Man.
Well, most people knew the operator was listening in, though, hopefully, so.
Well, I'm sure they did. They probably watched their manners. Even back in them days, I'm sure they, you know, naturally watched their manners anyway when they were talking on the phone. But I don't know. Maybe there were some folks that just didn't care, and the operator got an earful.
Or if they had a little sway on the operator, they could just, you know,
yeah,
buy him or her off, or her off, more than likely.
Call up the operator and say, "Hey, how's it going?"
I just needed something to talk to. I figured I'd just pick up the phone.
Oh, man. What a world. And they had all them cords. Did you ever see one of them old switchboards?
Where they have to pull out the audio jack and plug it in over and over again.
Electric guitar cords, you know, pull it out, plug it in the next one. Now you connected.
Yeah.
That's almost as bad as the two strings on the can deal, but hey, hey, that's how they did it.
It worked.
Yeah, imagine if they had like a million phone calls in one day. They'd be pulling and plugging, and somebody, oh, sorry, connected the wrong guy.
Yeah.
That would drive me nuts.
That'd be a lot of wires to keep track of, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. So they each had their own panel.
Yeah.
But, you know, technology's changed, and they found easier ways to spy on us, you know, automatic spies, you know, spy bots and stuff like that, malware.
What's important is that they, being our government, right, is spends billions upon billions of dollars to invest in, you know, robotics that basically spy or kill, you know, just destructive robots. when they do build, they being corporations this time instead of the government, which are almost the same thing, but when they do build robotics that build things and construct things, you know, then the way our system's set up is that, you know, somebody loses a job, basically.
Yeah.
Instead of focusing all the energy for construction and getting everyone to lose their, or to, you know, to not have to work for their cruddy job, you know, and do monotonous tasks, just have robots do it.
My question is, when it finally gets to that point where everything's all robotic and, you know, you don't have to go to the factory and do nothing, what do? Then are you like the Jetsons? Remember George Jetson in the cartoon? He used to go there every day, and all he would do is push buttons every day, and then he was complaining how his finger was hurting and stuff. He had a hard day at work.
I think that according to our system right now, if that happens, it's not going to be like the Jetsons, because you're going to have a whole bunch of people who are desperately looking for some type of, you know, people in general just want to do something with their lives. They want to be a part of something or explore something or do something, right? So when that's called like the Gaussian curve, when robotics out and technology outpace human capability, and then and it's already happened. The Gaussian curve basically already happened, where our production goes up, but people lose jobs and
yeah,
don't have anywhere to work, but yet production levels are still going up according to our GDP and all that kind of stuff, and then people start, you know, living on the streets, and you know, and that kind of situation is only going to get worse if we don't, you know, change our system, change the way we live.
Well, it's amazing if you look back at some of the old movies, like, you know, and this sounds kind of far-fetched, but if you go look back at the old Logan's Run videos, where, like, when people got to the age of 30, they had to go up on this carousel deal, and then basically a laser would blast them, you know?
Take them out.
Yeah.
Or the, what's that other one? Is that Logan's Run? No, what's that other one where they make the Soylent green?
I'm not sure, but in Logan's Run, they had, like, a little crystal in their embedded in their palm, and when they got to a certain age, it would stop glowing. And that would tell people that, you know, they had to be sacrificed or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you think about that old movie and you look at modern day depopulation talks, plans, or whatever, you know, some people think it's a conspiracy, but if you look at all the actions of the so-called global /corporations, they really don't want you hanging around to be 90 years old, you know, draining off the system. If you ain't giving them money, they don't want you, you know. It's kind of like an old cattle. You get rid of them or whatever. But, you know, it's really kind of disturbing when you look back at all those old videos, old movies and stuff like that, and then you see modern-day trends leaning that way, you know. You get to a certain age and you just, for the better of all humanity, you terminate your life. Screw that.
Probably because all those dudes, the heads of the corporation, watch movies like Logan's Run and got the idea from there.
I don't doubt that one bit.
You know, it's funny because we perceive things and manifest our own destiny, right? And we create my thought of it is like, imagination or creativity is kind of it's life, right? That's what life's all about.
Yeah, life imitates art.
Yeah, exactly. And so, whatever you can perceive of or contrive of in your head, and you create it, then bam, there you go. You're making it happen. So, a lot of people who are coming up with those ideas, you know, they probably grew up on those thoughts, and they are definitely entranced with the idea of ownership and the idea of scarcity and, you know, dog eat dog, or, you know.
Well, in every single movie out there that has to do with you know, a modern day utopia of enlightenment of the human race, always talks about you know, saving the environment and killing off the people, kind of thing, you know. So, you know, it's just what kind of mentality would think it would be all right to do something like that? It's just, to me, that would be pure evil, you know.
I think it's just kind of the thought that because Western society, the way that Western society consumes, and it's so programmed into most of us, you know, ever since, you know, World War II really kind of sunk it in, where, you know, we hit this kind of industrial epoch where we, especially in the States, where we say, oh yeah, we're you know, we're the top dog in the world, and we look at what we create, look at what we do, but at the same time neglecting the fact that everything that we bring into creation is out there and has some effect on the world. Well, with that effect, you know comes a whole lot of responsibility for what you bring into the world. You know, it's kind of like having a kid and then not taking care of the kid. You know, you're not taking responsibility for what you brought into the world. And so America is definitely one of the biggest creators of material things. or was, now it's kind of switching over overseas, but the idea of that has spread all over the world, and so if everybody in the world lived like Westerners, or especially Americans do, there definitely is not enough room on the world for everybody. But if everybody in the world lived, you know, modestly, and created some type of sustainment, whether it be through food or energy, or that's the same thing, but you know, they've created some type of sustainment, or and didn't just consume, but rather created things that could naturally, you know, change and go back to the earth or whatever, then that wouldn't be a problem. There would never be an overpopulation. There's enough. You could take all the people in the world and put them in Los Angeles, and everybody in the world would fit in Los Angeles. So it's not a matter of space. Well, it's a matter of what we consume and the resources we consume. You know, that's really what it comes down to.
Well, my whole thing is kind of along the same line, but then again, it's kind of opposite, because, like, you take your average house, for instance, you know, your average house is made out of wood and sticks and this kind of stuff like that, and, you know, it'll last maybe 20, there's actually been houses lived, you know, last over 100 years, but either way, you know, eventually it gets deteriorated down into a, you know, pile of rubble and junk. We got the technology to literally build housing that, you know, wouldn't mess with the environment. At the same time, you wouldn't be, you know, having to cut down trees or anything like that. We could build houses that would be weatherproof, hurricane, tidal wave, yep. all that kind of stuff.
Lasts forever.
Yeah, but yet we don't. And so, you know, I think we're a long ways away from the realization that, you know, we got to do, you know, something like that, you know, if we're going to, you know, finally get into an age where we are close to that true utopia, which I don't think we're ever going to be able to accomplish, because there's too many greedy, lazy people out there that just, they don't care, you know. Life is the...
Well, what? I agree. But at the same time, we can at least attempt, right?
Well, that's what we do, you know, and the listeners out here on these networks who really care, you know, about alternative energy, alternative food, but to get the, you know, the masses, all the masses, you know, your average Joe walking down the street, go out to Chicago or New York sometime and just sit on a bench and watch how people go about their lives. It's just, it's nuts. It's, you know, they're off in their own separate little world. You want to talk about the Matrix, man? That's a prime example right there. Nobody, they're creating their own little mini utopia, their own little bubble world, and everything's all well and good until it up and crashes. You know, these guys out here that think,
look at nature. Nature's a, you know, you can learn everything from nature, right? So look at nature, what it does. Like, we'll look at it energetically. Let's say you have some massive destructive force like a fission reaction, you know, or a, you know, nuclear blast or whatever. It only goes so far and then bounces itself out, because if it didn't, then all of nature would, you know, all of existence would basically go into this excited state where, you know, we wouldn't be able to live anymore anyways, but it would either implode or explode on itself.
Yeah.
Right? Well, there's always a failsafe to stop it from going too far, right? So just, we can implement that in our social structure, you know, like, or look at it this way. There's not more wolves than there's prey, and the reason why is because if there was more wolves than prey, then the wolf population and the prey population both fall, because they're interconnected. So nature, again, has a natural way of balancing that out by, you know, making the wolves far and the packs of wolves far and few in between and all that kind of stuff. So if we make a social structure where, you know, we encourage giving and things like that, instead of how we have it now, which is what we encourage, you know, taking and separation of people, just kind of like the wolf mentality. If we encourage giving and sharing and being selfless, you know, like, that would be our monetary, that would be our value of things, is that, you, oh, I give, I, you know, you're rewarded on merit of giving, you know, and how much you give. Then even the most selfish people would, you know, essentially give, even though they're doing it for their own selfish means. Nonetheless, that's, you know, if that was our currency, is the ability to give, then the most selfish people in the world would be giving too, and then you've created kind of a failsafe to.
Well, with that said, Well, that said, I guess I must be a freak of nature, because I kind of rather cut myself short than see anybody do without. You know, I just it literally drives me insane.
Yeah, I think most people are like that. They want to give back. You know, but
I believe that too. But then again, you got a section of society that don't give out of. They don't give out of, like we're talking about, love, just the love of humanity, just out of the goodness of their heart. They give out of feelings of guilt. You know, maybe I got all this stuff and I live in a really nice house and I see this guy on the side of the road with a sign and he needs some money or whatever, and I'm not giving it to him because of love. I'm just giving it to him because, you know, I feel guilty that I got more than he's got. And you understand what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah. And, you know, that's, guilt is basically, in that sense, is like empathetic. You know, you feel where that person's coming from. So that's love. I mean, you're putting yourself in that same place. It doesn't, you know, it's maybe not the same as, like, just being selfless and just giving for love, but you're at least thinking about it and putting yourself in that person's shoes. So,
yeah, some point, yeah, you're thinking about it, but yeah. what I'm saying is to make yourself feel better, kind of giving. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about too. Like, even then, you know, at least the selfish people are
yeah, at least you know they're still got some human left in them.
Exactly, at least they're connecting. Yeah, I think that, and the fact that, and then you got to look at, why is this person on the street? I mean, they could be doing drugs, they could have had a hard circumstance, so many factors, right? And, you know, to just put all that mental chatter, you know, that you could put place on them and label with them or whatever, you just put that to the side and just put yourself in their shoes right there. Like, that's what love is. It's understanding and acceptance and tolerance of other people and other things. So.
But I won't not give to somebody just because there's a possibility they might be on drugs. Just like if I see somebody out in the rain walking down the road, I won't not give them a ride to town because they might be an axe murderer or something, you know.
Yeah.
And in today's society, that's the way people are told, you know, you don't want to pick up hitchhikers, they might kill you or something, you know.
Oh, yeah, because I think it's because of the sensationalism and the media and stuff. I mean, that's like winning the lottery, really. I mean, it's the numbers. If you do the numbers and you look at it, you know, and you also keep your head about yourself, you know, and really,
yeah, they might steal from you, they might rob you, they might kill you, but then again, they might not. They might be like 99% of all the individuals out there and be a good-hearted soul and thankful for the ride, you know.
And that's probably more likely, you know.
That, yeah.
You know, I mean, you always put your guard up and get a little nervous, but you know, if you still do it, at least you're showing that you're connected with each other, and hey, I'm recognizing you as a human being. You know, sometimes that's all it takes for people.
I tell you what, one day I went down walking down the road, and I was just going out for a walk. I wasn't broke down or anything like that. I wanted to walk, and I had at least 20 cars stop to offer me a ride. And I thought that was just amazing, you know. I said, thanks a lot, you know, I'm just out for a walk, appreciate you stopping. And then I repeated that the next car, and the next car, and the next car, and pretty soon it got so obnoxious, you know, that I went on a gravel road and stayed away.
But stay away from the traffic.
I know that at least in my area, there are a lot of people concerned, you know, they recognize you, hey, you know, you need a ride? No, I'm just out for a walk, you know, thanks a lot.
You're a little more out there in the country, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Go down the city and try that, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of in suburbia a little bit, and it's kind of 50-50. It's very polarized, but whenever I see somebody, like, last week, this guy was walking by, and walking his bike, you know, and his tire was flat, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and he's like, you know, do you have a tire pump? And I'm like, I can check. I'm not sure. And got it, and it was a little teeny one. It didn't work and fill up his tire, and he's like, all right, well, thanks for trying, I guess I'll just walk it home. I'm like, hey, just put it in the back of my truck, and I'll take you home, you know. And he's like, really, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, go ahead, let's do it, that way you don't have to walk. It was
That's
a beautiful
cool,
day
man.
I'm sure he wouldn't mind walking, but you know, save him some time. So
I mean, people don't think about that, you know, that little gesture is a big deal, you know. It's that positive pebble we keep talking about, you know. You throw that ripple out there, because one day he'll be in a better position and somebody else will have the flat tire, you know, and he'll help them out.
Exactly. Or, I mean, even if you just put yourself in their shoes, like if I was that guy and my tire, first of all, my tire just went flat, so that's a bummer, and I'd be like, oh, man, I got to walk this home. And I try not to focus on those things, but, you know, you still think about that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I would love to get a ride home from somebody, especially an attractive man like myself, you know, who comes out and says, hey, you need a ride. That'd make my day. That was as funny as it's supposed to be.
Well, when you said that, it reminded me of a story. One day, my wife was going to come pick me up at work, and I did that whole sexy leg thing where I stuck my leg out like I'd pull my pant leg up there, you know, and she aimed the car right straight for me. Run me off in the grass.
Probably blinded by the
lack
of sun on the leg.
Yeah, right? The lack of tan going on.
That's what I would do. Probably happened with me too. I just blind somebody.
Oh man, but you know, if you can't count on your wife to try to run you down, who cares? You know,
yeah.
I don't want to sound discouraged on life, because life isn't all negative, but you know, I said yesterday life is like rustling a cactus, man. You know, if you can visualize running across the hot blazing sand in the desert heat, you know, barefoot, and run up on top of this 6 foot tall cactus and just wrestle that sucker to the dirt, you know, and once you get it down to the ground, you jump up and it, like in the scene from Rocky, yo Adrian, I did it, you know, it hurt like heck, but I did it. So
You can wrestle the cactus, or you can just appreciate its little flower on the top, I guess. You know?
Yeah, just go up there and just kind of like admire the cactus and talk nice to the cactus. Hey, you're a pretty cactus. I'm not going to hug you or anything. Nothing personal, but you know. But that's what life is like, man. You know.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes.
If you could replay your life, your entire life, going like fast forward, you know, like time lapse, super fast forward kind of thing, you know, where you go through all the falling down, falling out of trees, stubbing your toe, you know, hitting your head on the roof or whatever, you know, all the different times you banged your head, bumped your head, fell down, or fell in the mud hole, or did the belly flop off the high dive, and all that kind of stuff. I think life would be a humorous video, you know. I know mine would. I shocked the heck out of myself in the lab.
It's either I was talking to a friend yesterday about it. It's either, you know, you look at it as either a comedy or a tragedy. You know?
That's
kind of what it boils down to. So you can look at it and look at all the painful moments as horrible tragedies, or you can look at all the painful moments as hilarious comedies.
Yeah, like slapstick.
Yeah, and just laugh at the madness.
Mine would be a roller coaster of emotions. You'd be up, you'd be down, you'd be up, you'd be down, you'd be laughing so hard you'd probably throw up, and then, you know, they're like, what just happened there? You know, I saw your whole life. That was wild.
Yeah. Well, when we're going out, you know, many have said, who were going out on their way out and then came back somehow miraculously. You know, when we're going out, supposedly that's what happens, is you kind of have a reflection on all the experiences you've had in your life that were of importance, all in brief second, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll get the chance to.
Well, you know, like I say, we'll all find out, and you know, when it's all done, we'll all know who was right and who was wrong.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if there is a right or wrong. Maybe that's the real beauty of it, is that it's not a right or wrong type of question. It's more just a.
I think what would disturb me the most is if like life got over, you know, and then you switch over into the next dimension, which would be either heaven or hell. And then you get to the other side, and you know, let's say for instance you went to hell, right? And you get on to the other side, and all of a sudden, you know, it looks all terrible and everything, and then everybody jumps out from behind the curtain and starts laughing at you, ha-ha, you know, psych, you know. And, you know, it was all just you were in a movie-style experience, and none of it was even real, but you bought into it so much, you really had the terror of, you know, I'm burning in hell, you know.
Yeah, I think that ever since man asked the question, you know, why do I exist and things like that, that we've always kind of tried to explain things, and so, you know, the sun comes up and you have light, and the sun comes down and you have darkness. So then immediately there's you create like a polarization of, you know, because that's just our existence, is that polarization, you know, but then, we neglect, like, the middle ground, that middle ground that's not very seen, you know, like the sunset or sunrise, the you know, the cloudy day with no rain, or, you know, in between the sun or the rain, you know, like, we neglect those little neutral moments that are so beautiful, and we forget that, you know, we can't always explain everything with just our heads, you know, so
yeah.
we kind of create this mental, this mental polarization that's, that in some ways is not very productive, you know, because then you have people hating on other people because of differences of belief and stuff like that have been made in their heads. But I think my personal belief is that on our way out, you know, it's like like we were talking about, our whole life is kind of like a battle in the cactus. You're getting hurt, you're suffering, and lots of pain. But you know, when you go on your way out, and I don't think there is any more pain. It's just kind of just you're back into just a source, just, you know, like embraced by the hands of God, you know, just that all divine neutrality that's you can't really explain, you know, it's just being, it's just existence.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
I think I'm just gonna take one day at a time and find out whenever it gets here what's what, you know, but yeah. In the meantime, like I said, like you were saying, you know, I kind of took away from that, you know, every once in a while you got to stop and smell the roses or life just going to pass you right on by, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to take in, you never know, nobody ever knows when the last day is for anybody, you know, one day you're here and the next day you ain't, and so you live life to the fullest, you know, that kind of stuff, try to treat people the best you possibly can. Worst case scenario is it ends up being something like Groundhog Day where you have to live it over and over until you get it right.
Yeah, that's a possibility too. You know?
Oh, man.
Learning the lesson. Hopefully it's not just like Groundhog Day, because, man, that would be...
See, this could be because you and I are pretty much on the same plane of thought, along with a lot of the other people who's, you know, out here in the awake community. This could be like our, you know, 100th go or something like that, and we still have in the back of our mind imprinted some of the knowledge, and we've actually learned, you know, like different ages of souls and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So,
I mean, all we really have is the present. Perhaps we're living right now multiple lives all at once, and we can't see the big picture. We only can see the surface, you know, the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
But really, there's many points of us all simultaneously learning something at the same time, you know, and then perhaps death is just the reunification and seeing if you got it sorted out, or if you're gonna, you know, spread your tendrils, your fractal points of light back out to explore again, to see if you can learn something again, you know, who knows, there's so many ways you can look at it, it's quite beautiful.
Or even more Twilight Zone-ish, you know, all of this, it has already been done millions of years ago, and we're like living in an echo of times past or something like that, you know.
Yep.
I've seen all the Twilight Zone movies. They freak me out. One of the ones that really freaked me out was the whole, there was a box, and all these people were inside this box, and they were trying to figure out how to get out of this box. And so eventually they finally come across this idea where they'd stand on top of each other's shoulder, and then they'd shove the first guy over the edge of the box. And so they finally did. They managed to get one out of the box, and then it turned out that when they was outside of the box, they were just a toy. They weren't even alive. You know, they thought they were alive, but when they got out of the box, it was just a plastic toy. That was wild. Whoever sat around and thought up all those Twilight Zone movies must have had a warped, distorted mind. I mean, they must
have... Well, you know, it's creative thought. It's creating whole universes of reality, you know.
Well, either that or they were partaking of the herb.
Or even more intense than that, some type of hallucinogen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because some of them are some really bizarre...
Yeah. I know they make you go, what?
What did I just watch? Anyway, it's fascinating what the human mind can create. You know, it's when you're sitting here talking amongst each other, you're literally watching the other person's conversation in your head like a movie. And, you know, so we can visually put movies into each other's head.
Yeah.
Now, why couldn't we, the people who feel like we're at least awake from the Matrix and trying to point out these things, speak to people around the world and put those movies, positive movies, in their head, you know, give them that, plant that seed of hope or an idea that, you know, will blossom into, you know, the actual dream one day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what movies like, that's what, like you said, the Matrix, that movie essentially did that. And, that movie had so many spiritual references. It was quite astonishing how many spiritual references that movie had. But you know,
I liked the movie The Matrix, but it kind of disturbed me at the same point because I was thinking, you know, what if?
Yeah, what if this is how we actually are living right now?
What if this was all
all open for interpretation? It's just like
hologram.
Any type of belief, you know?
So, yeah.
You know, there's tons of golden truths in that movie, but I like to believe that it's not quite, not to take it so literally, that we actually are in some pod right now, you know, in fluid with some crap hooked up to the back of our head.
Yeah, waiting to be either batteries or lunch for some alien race or something like that. See, hey, are you listening to us? We have literally looked into all the movies out there, and we posed the question, what if? You know, you see all the monster movies, like the vampire movies and stuff like that, and, you know, you've heard all the stories about Bigfoot. I mean, we've got stories after stories after stories, and we know that life imitates art, and it always comes back to the same question. What if that was real, you know? Man,
yeah, well, there's probably some little bits of truth in everything. Usually, you know, and if a movie's really good, it means it's got lots of bits of truth. Usually, because people can relate to it, you know.
Yeah, well, but vampires are real. I know that for a fact because they fly around my yard every summer and like they get on your neck and you know.
Skeeters, right?
Yeah, skeeters are terrible around here, man.
Yeah. Or just people. Some people. They're so negative and they're so upset about things, they just sap your energy.
Oh, yeah.
Come in and you're just like, oh, my God, I don't even want... Oh, I want to go and crawl in a corner somewhere and just sleep. I feel drained. So, you know, tons of different... Or Bigfoot. Every time I look in the mirror, I see Bigfoot. So I'm like a gorilla, man. I'm a hairy fella, so...
Well,
another one that wasn't very funny.
It was funny. You know, I wear a size 10.5 shoe and I'm 6'2", so, you know, when I look down at people, you know, it's not looking down because I'm looking down on them because of, you know, I think I'm better than them. I'm just tall, you know.
Yeah.
And I always do a joke around about short people crack me up, you know. my wife gets... I get on her nerves saying that all the time. You know, that's my personality. I'm always trying to make something funny out of something that, you know, it's obnoxious, you know. You got to learn to laugh in the face of adversity or life will get you down.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just incredible if a person actually sits back and contemplates on the grand scheme of everything, from the amazing beauty and technology that went into creating this earth, the mathematics of whatever, you know, and then you're just thinking about just the earth alone, and then you start thinking about your existence, and then you actually look out into space, and then it's like, wow, you know, this is this times trillions, you know.
Yeah.
What?
It's a pretty incredible design.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's amazing.
Quite beautiful, that's for sure.
But it kind of has a tendency, like I was listening to that song, Dust in the Wind, I threw that up there for some crazy reason, and that song is depressing, man. You know, essentially talking about life short, you come and go, and then we're just like a little speck in the wind, and, you know, insignificant. So when I hear that song, I feel like, you know, it's a depressing song.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it has a little bit of, I think it's just the way it's conveyed, too, kind of adds that sadness, you know, a little bit, like, so fragile and stuff. But then, in fragility, you know, it's like a flower, you know, it's a beautiful song. You appreciate it as it is, you know.
Yeah, it's beautifully written and everything, but when a person looks at theirself like just a tiny speck in the whole grand scheme of things, you know, there's trillions and trillions of grains of sand on the earth, you know, and if you're just one of those grains of sand, how can you affect the whole entire world? But it's what amazes me the most is that that one little tiny grain of sand does have the power to affect all of the grains of sand in the deal. Like, for example, just in placement alone, if that one grain of sand wasn't where it's at, then all the other grains of sand wouldn't be where they're at either.
Yeah. Or at least in the immediate area.
Yeah, they might be just a tiny fraction over, but that tiny fraction could make the entire difference of their existence, you know?
When you're a grain of sand, yeah.
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 Isn't that deep, man?
Yeah, oh yeah. That's pretty deep stuff.
So, you know, average human, you know, where you're at in your life and the fact that we're not like the grain of sand, we can actually get out and interact with the world. You have the power to literally design a world around you that is, you know, either way, either terribly negative or awesomely positive. And so, with that said, you have a lot of power, you know, just with your words alone. Words can literally destroy people's lives, and words can literally uplift people's lives. And so, when I finally come to a realization of how powerful words really are, I started being real careful about what I said and to who I said it and how I said it, you know, because you can deliver a word to somebody and by the way that you say that word, either sarcastically or hatefully or whatever, you know, speak wisdom with a quiet voice. You know, you don't go out there and stand on the corner and shout out your religious views and say, you know, you listen to me or you're gonna burn in hell and the end is here, you know, and all this kind of stuff. No, you go out there and you walk softly and you talk to the world in a respectful manner. You know, if you got something to share with them, you know, but you see the difference between the two.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I think, as well, like, you can learn a lot from others. I mean, if you listen, there's not even just people, but just life in general, if you just listen and embrace things for as it is instead of how you see it, you can, things become very beautiful and whole worlds open up to you, you know? You just, if you knock it out before you even, you know, it's like knocking something before you try it, you know? You see this big brown thing, and it looks just, you know, that your wife made or whatever, and it looks disgusting. And it's like, you know, that looks gross. You know, that is, it looks like a, you know, some dog poo. You know,
yeah, you just destroyed her heart, man.
Right. Well, more than just her feelings, you're locking yourself out of experience in the first place. So, you know, you're like, oh, I'm not gonna try that. But, you know, if you just take a bite, you know, you realize that it's some chocolate pudding, and you're like, wow, that's good. You know, you don't know until you try it. You know, I'm not saying, you know, go out and try some dog food, but you know, if you immediately have a belief in something, then you are creating your reality. And thoughts, like you say, and words are just expressing those your thoughts. And so when you express your thoughts, you're basically sharing you with somebody else, and vice versa. So,
well, personally, words have consequences for yourself as well, but you know, for everyone else, there's a lot of responsibility every time you open your mouth, because you know, we are family. We are all connected, you know, no matter how you want to look at it, no matter what your color, your race, your political views, or your religious beliefs, or anything like that. Nobody in this world, not even an atheist, can deny that we're all connected in some way because of, you know, however we got here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's, you know, we're all living in the present right now, and that's that. If nothing else, that's our connection, you know? That's,
well,
all currently alive.
For what it's worth, I honestly feel like the folks on the Knights of the Round Table and the folks actually listening in to these shows are enlightened, you know? And I know that borderlines on sounding Luciferian or whatever like that, but I'm not talking about that type of enlightenment. I'm talking about, you know, wisdom gained through whatever style of life you know. A lot of people been down a rough road, and that rough road defined who you are today. And so with that said, a lot of us have been down some paths that we would like to see other people not have to go down, and so we're sharing information with them and basically putting ourselves out there on the table to you know, give them the opportunity to see that there are different paths that you can go down in life. Am I wrong?
I mean, I'm not really at liberty to say that if you are right or wrong. That's kind of those type of things. Enlightenment is something that you can't teach somebody. People can only teach themselves, you know. And it's
like the first time you stub your toe on a coffee table. I said something
right.
Funny yesterday, you know, that most generally when I stub my toe on the coffee table, it's all screeze and bleeze and foul words, you know, that come out my mouth. But I got to thinking, you know, every time something bad happens to me, if I sling out a bunch of negativity, then all I'm doing is, you know, adding more negativity to the world and giving the dark side more power over me. So essentially what I start doing now is whenever I stub my toe is I like, thank you, Jesus, you know. You know, I learned to keep my eyes open next time. You know, watch out for that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's
certainly a more constructive way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of foul-mouthing and just dragging your world down, because I've witnessed this with me and my wife both. We've had times, and we finally got to come to an enlightenment of where, instead, when we have a really bad day, instead of coming up and venting on each other and just like, you know, oh, this happened and that happened and that happened, one person could be having an awesome day and then suddenly they come up and all this negativity just sucks
exactly
the life out of you.
Oh, yeah.
And so we try to sit around and kind of laugh about the stupidity of the day, you know, like I fell down the stairs. I made a joke out of the whole deal, you know. You know, I was talking about, you know, how it hurt like heck, and, you know, I'm splayed out to all four points of the compass, and my glasses went off to the other direction, you know. But it was all in the delivery. I could have just went in there, poor me, boo-hoo, and whine, and, you know, piss and moan until I just depressed the crap out of her, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't, so we kind of...
If somebody has a good day, and they share, like, the good things that happened in their day, that sometimes that will help... you know, help bring up the person who didn't have a good day, you know?
So, yeah. Tell me some positive stories, you know? That's what one of my major grievances with the mainstream media, outside of the fact that I feel like they betrayed humanity and not telling the truth and doing a real investigative journalism, you know, and telling what's what and informing people the right way. All they do is try to get as much ratings as they possibly can by going out there telling every story. Oh, there was a gun shooting down there, you know, and people died. And
it depends on the media source, but yeah, I do agree with you for the most part.
I'm talking about mainstream media, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like you can't blame the sinner, you know. It's the sin in general. It's the idea that we all are kind of, you know, me not excluded, we all are kind of buying into the,
Well, and that's the key right there. You know? That's the key right there, is because the only reason why they're able to do that is because we keep buying it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if you call, if a million people called up the doggone TV station and said, hey, look, you know, I appreciate you telling us about, you know, things that are going on around town, but do you think that you could try to balance this out a bit? Because every time I watch your channel, I get so depressed, I become suicidal.
Yeah, well,
you know what I'm saying?
It goes kind of goes back to like what you said before, but you have to do it yourself, and that's like the enlightenment thing is like,
yeah.
When you look at it like with the big picture, and all you can really do is either be like have a comedy or a tragedy with the things you see. So if you just laugh at it, like this whole Ukraine thing, I mean, I kind of just laugh at it because essentially what's happening is Russia wants resources. And the European Union wants resources, right? And they're both just battling over resources, and they're using resources as threats to battle over resources. And it's like, you know, all you can do is laugh about that. What are you gonna do? Like, you guys are fighting. You guys are like two children fighting over, you know, a cookie. You know, break the cookie in half. You know, is what you're gonna end up doing. But it's still a cookie, so.
Well, if the average Joe had that in their mind, just like what you just said, that would be a spectacular thing. You know, these folks over there, when they, you know, I said this a long time ago, and it's sad that down in my area during there was riots down in my area, and these folks, they literally went around burning down buildings, bashing in windows, and just destroying their own neighborhood. Not somebody else's neighborhood. They didn't go for the person who would have initially started this deal. They figured they was just going to trash society. Well, unfortunately for them, that when they did that, to this very day, that same town is still abandoned from businesses that won't go down there. There's the houses are falling down and deteriorating because if you're a business, prospective business, you don't want to move into a neighborhood that at one point, you know, there was these huge riots and people were getting killed and the buildings were getting burned down. You know, instead of going like I said, directly to the source of what it was they were angry about, they destroyed their own communities. And the same thing applies to the Ukraine and all the different countries of the world when they get mad at each other. I mean, look at a war zone, any war zone. You just destroyed the infrastructure. You made it where people can't get water. You made it where they can't get food. Nobody can get up and go to work safely. You know, you just displaced a whole bunch of people. When is the time going to come when the average Joe out there understands that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, and sometimes, because of Murphy's Law, the action's worse than what it was to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
My door wouldn't open right, so I got mad and I slammed it, and then I busted the door frame, you know? So now I don't just have to fix the doorknob, I gotta fix the whole frame.
Yeah. It's a, you know, that's just a quick response of the, like, your self-preservation or your self, you know, your inability and ability to control your environment, basically. It's the idea of controlling your environment. But in essence, we don't really ever control our environment. It's more of just an influence. We can influence it to move with it. Or it's like, you know, a fish in a river. You know, you can swim upstream or you can swim downstream. Swimming upstream is a lot harder. But sometimes it's necessary, and swimming downstream is cake, you know. But
yeah, and sometimes it's fun, but sometimes you run into some rapids going downhill, you might have to take that hard road.
Right, exactly. But none of it is truly a battle. It's just movement. It's going somewhere, right? So if we understand how things move and how that river moves, then we can go through it. We can move with it a lot better. But if we're always trying to fight it or we're always just going with it, then you know, problems arise. So,
well, I've never been one of the go with the flow kind of guys, so I've always kind of took the hard road to get to where we all end up anyway. So,
well, it's there's a balance, you know. So it's a good balance there, and it's
But all of these things that we talk about finally bring you to a point of wisdom to where you understand what the difference between common sense and sheer stupidity is. And so, you know, you start to adopt your life like that. You know, some people would just call it getting old and wise, you know. But for us to make any of all that what we went through worthwhile, we need to be able to show people in the world out there, like, you know, like a father does his kids. You know, a father don't set down rules to his kids because he hates his kids. He sets down rules to his kids because he knows that, you know, if you go over and stick your finger in the fire, you're going to get burnt, and he don't want his kid burnt, so he says, look, don't stick your finger in the fire.
Yeah, because I don't want to see you get burned.
Yeah.
But then sometimes the kid still goes and burns himself or herself, and, you know, you just have to, you know, that was your lesson you had to learn, you know. It's like, I'm not you, I'm trying to help you. And then you just explain that, you know, I'm not you, I'm just trying to help you. That's why I said not to stick your finger in the fire, you know.
Yeah.
But, as far as changing things go, like, you know, that, Ukraine's a good example, right? Because you have these two sides that are battling over power, and then you have all these people who listen to those sides because those sides are, on a hierarchy. They're like the kings and queens of the land and the nobles or whatever, and then you have all the people underneath them who listen to them and move with them, and so you have your people who want to, you know, be a part of Russia, and then you have your people who want to be a part of the Western world, and then you have this division. But really, you know, if you fight each other, especially with you know, stones, guns, whatever weapons you're using, then what ends up happening is, you know, you create more destruction than fallout than originally was there, and the people who kind of are going with the flow, they unfortunately become the victims and all that kind of stuff. But if you do, like, in the past, the people who have done the most, that have changed the world the most, okay, have really impacted the world, and it hasn't changed from what they impacted it by, usually do it non-violently, and they sacrifice themselves, and, you know, they basically give their all, and don't force any type of idea. They just give themselves to show a shining example of what could be the potential we have. You know, if you can, there's so many people I could name so many lists, but I'm sure that you can think of one.
Well, yeah, so. there's something really amazing to be learned by that whole deal, man. If you look back in history and you think about all the people who put us where we are today to give us the opportunities that we have in life, you know, we're not living in a barbaric society, so to speak, as far as, you know, what would be depicted in an old movie, you know, everybody running around clubbing each other. I mean, to some extent, we still are kind of barbarians as far as the way that we conduct ourselves around the world, war-wise and all that kind of stuff. But those folks who actually put the effort towards doing something good actually paved the road for us, and so the responsibility for us is now to pay that forward to somebody else, you know, our future generations.
Yeah,
that's what I think the whole Knights of the Round Table is all about. Yeah, so yeah. We got Mitko in here. Are you there, brother?
Yeah, okay.
What do you think about what we're talking about?
I just wanted to tell you a story.
Let's hear it.
Yesterday after the show, I was arguing with my friend about what would be the best energy source for the future. And I was saying, of course, without free energy, I was saying that nuclear energy, the thorium, new reactors.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. I was saying it would be nuclear energy, and do you know what he told me?
What?
He was concerned about the heat coming from the reactors and warming up the atmosphere. Do you know how stupid that
yeah.
sounds? the heat coming from the reactors.
Yeah, they said the thorium, you got a little size of the chunk of coal of thorium could be shielded by something as simple as a sheet, something as simple as a sheet of aluminum. And so, you know, it's not as powerful as you think. It's powerful enough to, you know, heat the water and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they use basically thorium and a laser to heat water to run turbines, which in turn runs generators. And so, you know, it's not as dangerous as people, you know, perceive it to be.
But when someone believes the sheer heat coming from it is enough to warm up the atmosphere, he can believe anything with what you throw at him.
Yeah, and, well, belief, you know, it's all mental talk. It's all, you know, if you do the experiments and use your perception to guide you through the environment, and the environment will be your teacher, you know.
Well, we kind of touched on this earlier. Before you reject something like that pudding that you talked about earlier, you should at least try it, you know, experiment on it and find the pros and cons of it, and then give your input on the deal. Not just take the word of somebody else, you know, and say that this is this and that's all there is to it, you know. Otherwise, you know, I said it yesterday. I said I'm probably going to be the most hated person in all the colleges of the world, but I call them the flat earthers because they have no capabilities for the most part of thinking outside the box and questioning what we call the norm. You know, if the mainstream science guys say that the earth is flat, then the mainstream science guys, because they've been here longer and have more wisdom, they must be right, you know. No,
a lot of times it's not they have more wisdom, it's just they've had their set beliefs and set money, but then they get stuck in this idea that can't be changed, and then science becomes perverted. It's like, you know, it's just self-preservation of their mind.
Well, yeah, but see, the scary thing is
what they research and everything, you know, so.
The scary thing is, though, that they pass that on down the line, like teaching kids in school about, you know, polar bears are going to drown and global warming and all this kind of stuff, you know. It drives me nuts because some folks are so passionate about global warming / climate change that it's almost as if it's a religion. But if you just step back from the big picture and you talk about the actual true science, the provable science of the whole deal, and you start off with just a simple basics of the carbon molecule, you know. Carbon, CO2, is nothing more than two. Yeah, it's heavier than air, and you can't change that. You know, you can't change it with diagrams or whatever. It's factual. You can find out. You know, CO2 falls to the ground because it's heavier than air. It displaces oxygen. You can't argue that. But somehow or another, it's magically getting up there where oxygen can't go. Now, I understand that when jet airplanes fly through the sky, they're putting out some carbon monoxide from the fuel that they're burning. But,
right.
You know,
I think it's it goes like this, though, is the Earth has its natural balancing process. So all that carbon monoxide and dioxide goes goes into our watersheds. Then our water systems have that cleansing effect where they try to clean it out and scrub it.
Well, not to mention plants are still doing the same thing, plants
right.
on
so
land.
There's certain plants that thrive off of those type of environments of carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide. They create plumes of different types of algae and all kinds of stuff, and then in turn release methane gas. But the thing is those processes have happened naturally. You know, if the tables were turned and oxygen was being delivered into the environment at an alarming rate, a ridiculous rate, it'd be the same thing. It would be climate change. You know what I mean? Climate wouldn't be changing still, you know?
Go to the Philippines, man, and you'll see climate change for real.
Yeah.
One day, you're standing out there, the sun's out in the sky, it's all beautiful day. 5 minutes later, it's pouring down rain, and 5 minutes later, the sun's back out again. It's as if, you know, where did that come from?
Right. I think the real debate is how much are we impacting the environment? And my personal belief is when you look up in the sky and you see jets flying by and they're dumping tons of chemicals, because that's what they have, is chemicals and their gas. You know, people talk about chemtrails and weather alteration. That's all speculation, but the fact is that you drive your car, it burns fossil fuels, it's separating and changing into different things. The same with jet fuel. It's burning a fuel and changing into different things, chemical compounds. Those chemical compounds are easily seen in the sky. So say that to ask the question, are we affecting our environment, the question should even be asked. Yes, we are affecting our environment. We always do.
Yeah, but it's a fishbowl effect, brother. Because there's nothing that you can do. I don't care what material you make. You take this material and you mix it with that material. They say that plastic lasts in the dumps for thousands of years, which is the crock, because I go out metal detecting all the time, and I find plastic that is deteriorated that just crumbles in your hand. And
it
so
depends on circumstance too, though. I mean, what type of plastic? What, you know, if you bunch it all together in one giant thing. It's like the idea of perpetual motion, right? Perpetual motion doesn't exist because nothing lasts forever, right? It's the same principle. It's just a. I don't know. I just look at it like this: like we do create circumstances. You just look around and you can see that we've erected huge cities, and those cities affect watersheds and affect other creatures.
Yeah, but once again, it's the fishbowl, man. Look, I live out in the country. I can go 30, 40 miles to the west of me, and I can stand on a hill and look over the city, and I can literally see the smog around the city. Everything else outside that city is perfectly clear. You go out to the country, and you'll notice a difference, like spending a week down in the city as opposed to a week out in the country, the difference in the air and the water, everything, you know.
Because the trees and plants are all taking care of their duties, and there's a natural balance that nature's already created.
Yeah.
Nature's already created that perfect design, but in the cities, we force our will, we impose our will, we use our minds to completely shape the city. And that's what I'm saying, is that to ask the question, do we affect our environment? It shouldn't even be asked.
Well, we do. We definitely do.
Down the street.
But once again, on the grand scheme of things, it is a small effect, because if you look at, take two different people. You take a farmer and you take a man the same age from the city down there, and you match them up against each other, you're going to know that man from the city is not nearly as healthy as that farmer. You look at their eyes, you know. Look at their demeanor, the way that they live, you know. That you go to Walmart in the middle of the night and you will see people that are so sickly looking that it's just almost apocalyptic. It's bizarre. It's like walking zombies, you know.
And that's my point, is that somebody's mind, usually your own, our minds, right, our gift of creation is also a curse. And if we don't take responsibility and look at the natural patterns of the environment that's already been set up, that even gave us the ability to do these things, then we're going to create something else. Creating a separation from a source.
Why couldn't cities be intertwined with nature? Such as if you're going to have a roof, you know, a big old black tar roof up there, you know that black tar roof is going to contact radiant energy, which in turn is going to create more heat down in the city. So the temperature difference between all the concrete and everything down in the city, as opposed to standing out in the grass in the country, is very significant. You can test that yourself. But if you're going to build a skyscraper, on the top of that skyscraper, build a garden, you know. Build some gardens around town, some plants to absorb carbon emissions and stuff like that. And you will notice that people down there will start feeling more healthy. They will start being probably a little bit nicer to one another, you know, because when you feel good, you treat people good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're creating things that are naturally beautiful and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We go back to the fishbowl statement. We are basically in one big fishbowl, right? I mean, so that, and whether you look at it as water or you look at it as air, you know, you could, liquid physics still apply to both. And so you're in a car, right, with your family, and, you know, one person farts, everybody's going to smell it. Well, if everybody starts farting, you know, then you're always going to have that smell, and pretty soon you're just going to get used to that smell. So the question is, are we going to get used to that smell? Are we just going to get used to it, or are we going to, you know, crack a window?
Well, I usually like to tell people that if they do that in the car, that they're going to walk. But on the fishbowl deal, there's multiple fishbowls. You count up all the cities in the world and all the small towns in the world, and I guarantee the cities are going to be the filthiest fishbowls, and the small towns will be second best, and then out in the country is going to be the best place to live because of the environment being able to do what nature does. Yeah. So, you know, our world, as far as us polluting it and chopping down trees and all this kind of stuff, nature is going to always be in control, no matter how tough that people think we are. We can never defeat nature. If you make nature mad, nature will shake you off like a bad set of fleas.
That's what I'm saying. Is it going to kick us out of the car?
Well, it may very well do that. If we get out of line, we'll know it. You know, that's all there is to it, you know. If you kill off all the bees on the planet, you know, via chemtrails or pesticides or whatever, you kill off all the bees, now you personally are responsible for going around pollinating all these flowers, and you better be very efficient at it like the bees are, otherwise you're going to starve to death because it's going to be a domino effect to where now you can't grow certain things anymore. You're going to be eating potatoes or something that don't have to be pollinated.
Mushrooms.
Yeah, mushrooms. And make sure you get the right mushroom, otherwise you're going to be tripping.
Tripping or dying, one of the two.
Yeah, tripping or dying, or eating. And I don't know how nutritional mushrooms are. I mean, maybe they're all right, but...
No, they're pretty nutritional. They're superfood.
You eat the wrong one, and you got some problems.
Well, also, if you have an overabundance of mushrooms, you probably have some depletion of some type of mineral or whatever, and if you're just doing one type of growing, like for example, industrialized farming, in Iowa, for example, they do corn and soybeans, and they rotate between the two to try to balance the soils out. But then they can't keep the hordes of locusts or whatever, you know, whatever diseases happen. So
yeah.
Then they have to modify it, and they have to spray chemicals and that. Well, if you originally set it up to where you grew a multitude of different things that all could all help each other all at once, rather than trying to do whole controlling growing processes, if you just grew a whole bunch of things that all grew together at once, you wouldn't need all that stuff. You wouldn't need all the pesticides. You wouldn't need all that stuff. You let the bugs eat a couple.
Yeah, like aquaponics, man, where the fish basically feed the plants.
Yeah.
Why don't people grow mushrooms? I mean, they grow very fast. They're nutritional, and nothing attacks them.
Yeah, but have you heard that phrase that you are what you eat? There's a fungus among us.
Hey, man, I've been told I'm a fun guy.
You are a fun guy. But you know, like we're talking common sense. You know, common sense isn't so common anymore. You know, people just, you know, you ask somebody where chicken comes from, it comes from the grocery store, you know. They don't know the whole, you know, the farmer standing out there feeding the chicken food until it gets big enough to send off to the whole process and everything.
I think a lot of people do understand these things, but the problem that that arises yet again is that we've developed a system of hierarchy, where instead of all acting as a collective, we're acting there's some that are privileged and born into privilege and born into high society or born to be a leader.
Yeah.
And not everyone can be a leader, and that very idea that we all, you know, play into sometimes is kind of the real root of the problem. And so we've created a social structure, a system based upon money and who can make the most money, and the person who makes the most money stays on top. And you know, the idea of, like, for example, Darwinism is a very interesting topic, because I hear it's like both creationists and atheists both don't even talk about what Darwin actually said. Darwin never said it's the survival of the strongest. He never once said that. Darwin said it's the survival of the most adaptable to change. The creature that will adapt to the circumstance and change accordingly is a creature that survives. It's not the creature that is the strongest and can dominate the others, and it's not the you know, well, that's what both sides kind of say it as. You know, it is more like intelligent design, really. I mean, it's more like a greater picture, an idea that you can pass on thoughts through your ancestry, and though they may be buried subconsciously or whatever, those thoughts are still there, and you're still communicating with each other and interacting and adapting to changes always, you know. So it's just, it's how we want to continue on in the present, you know. We want to just continue on like this and end up you know, living in a world where everything is concrete and it's smelly, you know, and kind of dingy, and you know, like we talked about at the very beginning, whatever we create in our minds, like movie-wise, you know, can come into existence. Well, you know, do we want to live in a RoboCop post-apocalyptic, Mad Max type of scenario, or do we want to live in like a, you know, closer to a utopia, you know, some type of a, what's that? Is I can't think of a good movie that expresses a utopia.
Well, they all have a sample of everything, you know, in it. What was you saying, Mikko?
I was just saying there's not a lot of movies that talk about utopians.
Yeah.
Well, as long as we're willing to uplift our presidents and representatives and all of our actresses and actors and, you know, musicians and all that to essentially king status, there's always going to be somebody higher than you. You know, you look up to them, you want to be them and that kind of stuff instead of just being yourself, which is the most important thing. You know, people always strive to be something that they're not. And so with that said, how are you ever going to reach your max potential? How are you ever going to find out what it is that you're fully capable of doing if you don't just get up and do it? You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah. You know, that's like, you know, that's like something that's neglected to be taught in schools. It's like spirituality, you know. It's that right there is the enlightenment. It's looking within yourself and seeing your unique perspective or your unique version of the greater consciousness, the greater state of being. You are that one unique flower. You have a distinct certain pattern that is different, but is not separated from a larger pattern. You know.
Well, in my
and that goes on, you know, far beyond what I can even conceive of. You know, before infinity, but.
In my belief system, our Creator didn't make any mistakes, and each and every one of us being the individuals that you just mentioned, you know, we are essentially not living up to our full potential, no matter how you look at it. I mean, you try, you know, some folks really seriously try, they do what they can, but society has a way about, you know, because of laws, rules, regulations, and all that kind of stuff, which I'm not saying we have to live without. I'm just saying that there's a lot of times that they become a burden and a hindrance more than they do, you know, helpful, you know. But to meet your full potential, a lot of things have to play out, you know. You have to have help from other people to, you know, give you that opportunity to meet that potential. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, like a collective, like we all contribute to it. But if you, you know, like we're talking about the enlightenment thing, if you look within yourself and you change yourself, you know, you change the world. You move your one little piece of sand.
Yeah.
And that piece of sand affects everyone else. So, you know, so many people point their fingers and say, oh, you know, you need to change, or you need to do this, or we all need to do this. But really, the only way anything's ever going to change is just when you change yourself.
Exactly. So. And before they look out at you and tell you what you need to do, they need to look into themselves and figure out what they need to do in order to make it easier for you to be able to accomplish your goals.
Right. And your actions will speak far louder than any words or any thoughts that you have. You know, obviously, the words and the thoughts precede the actions, and words, in a sense, are an action. But the true action is, you know, you stop, you know, buying stuff at the grocery store and you start growing your own food, or you stop, telling people they're wrong, and instead you just stay quiet and listen to them and try to understand their perspective, or you stop, you just stop to reflect. As simple as that. You stop and reflect. You look at yourself and where you're at and your relation to the situation, rather than looking at yourself as separate and higher or lower in the situation.
Yeah, and anytime you want to, run roughshod over somebody who's trying to tell you their perspective, you're cheating yourself out of possible knowledge that could be gained from that. They may be wrong on it. Like, for instance, on a free energy device, they may be wrong. There may be a flaw to the system. However, they thought enough of this energy device to explain it, and so within what they are explaining is something worthy of hearing. There's that anomaly that I keep talking about. You know, the one time out of the 10 times it was tried, you got this one specific result. And so I'm willing to listen to anybody who's willing to talk and share a bit of their life and their information with me, because there's something to gain there, literally, yep. You know, knowledge-wise or friend-wise, or, you know, maybe you can guide them in the right direction to making their dream become a reality by, you know, assisting them, giving them a pep talk or whatever, you know.
Yeah, you know, and that's like the kind of the perversion of mainstream science that we're talking about, is that the fact that there's so many people who are like, I've been through, you know, 8 years, 12 years of school, and what you have to say isn't important because I've already learned it or whatever, and you haven't gone through what I've gone through. But yet,
yeah, like the
greatest
company.
Teachers who have ever existed were also the greatest students.
Exactly.
You can't have one without the other, you know what I mean? And so you can learn just as much from your students as you can teach them, and those are the true, and there are shining examples of that in mainstream, you know. But like those are the true scientific type of minds, the ones that are acceptant of all people's ideas, and instead of telling you they're wrong, say, you know, hey, well, this is you know, here's some problems that you run into when you do that, this and this, and it's probably not. You know, it's probably not going to work. You can still try it, but I'm just, it's like, you know, the conversation, you know, don't stick your finger in the fire because I've done it and it burns. You know, that same type of thing.
Well, like the companies that you work for out there, you know, a lot of times a company would be so set in their ways that, you know, a new guy comes on the scene and he's working and he sees a better way to do things, but the company won't listen to him. Well, I've been doing this for 30 years and it worked all these 30 years, so we're not changing it now. Well, you know, they just missed out on a potential to maybe improve their output or whatever, you know, to make their business better. So, yeah. You know, you now not only have, you know, the same mess you started with, but you have an employee's disgruntled because, you know, you weren't willing to hear any of his ideas. You made him feel lesser. I'm just a servant. So I just keep my mouth shut and work hard and, you know, let things go the way they go. You know, I've worked in a lot of companies, and if I work in a company for 2 years and I see that there's no chance of possible advancement, or that they're just continuously repeating the same old mistakes or waste after waste, I will literally move on. I'll be like, you know, look, this just isn't for me, because, you know, I did this with one company. It was pretty impressive. I went to work for this foundry one time, and it actually turned out to be more than I could physically handle because, you know, it was some really heavy-duty work, you know. But as I was doing this work, I was redesigning systems in my mind, and I put it all down on paper, and I give them a stack of papers of designs that they could use to not only make the work environment better for everybody, but make it more efficient so that they could make more money. And so, yeah. When I lost this job, before I went in to get my last paycheck, I gave my now former employer this stack of information and let him look at it. And as he was looking at it and the designs on there, I had like hydraulic ladles that would save a person's back from having to lift 70 pounds at a time 4 times in a row for every single shot that they put through the machine. And it would do it smoothly enough to where you wouldn't have to worry about bubbles in the material. And when he looked at this stuff, he told me, and he kind of spoke out of turn because there was people higher than him. He said, "You know, I'm going to find you another job here because these are incredible." You know, of course, I never got another job out of it because, like I said, he spoke out of turn. But he was really truly impressed, and they implemented those systems into their factory, and they made a killing off of my ideas. You know?
Yeah. Well, and see, and so the overall, the big picture was the financial one, but You know, but your immediate idea was more of safety and efficiency, right?
Yeah.
You didn't want people to hurt. Well, so, like, right now I'm in that boat, you know, because I'm still a young buck, you know, working for the man, so to speak. But, you know, those ideas that when they're put out there and shot down, you do that over and over again, you start to not really care about what you're doing anymore. You don't want to be there. You're not...
Yeah, you start doing shabby work.
Right. Well, and then you also recognize that the only reason why they ever, like, the higher-ups ever would want to take on those safety calls and stuff like that is just so they can save themselves money, you know? And then it's like, so no matter what you do, the overall goal of this whole situation is a financial one. And then all you end up doing is you get sad about it or you laugh about it.
Well,
what it comes down to again.
That wasn't the only company that I ever drew up diagrams for, because my mind's really mechanical. Every company that I've ever worked for, I've always drew diagrams up for improvements on there, and they always implemented them. You know, one specific company made 3 machines that I designed. Cost them $25,000 a piece to have these machines built, and used them ever since, and they were saving about $2,000 a week on materials and, you know, injuries to people from hot oil and stuff like that. And so, you know, they really benefited from it. But it all did fall down to financial. If they didn't see that there was a financial issue in there, they didn't have no concern about somebody. You know, they're paying you to go in there and burn your fingers. So, you know, you get what you wanted, and we got what we wanted.
Yeah.
But either way, let's take a music break and get some fresh coffee and come back and work out the last portion of the show. What do you think?
Sounds good.
All right. Well, everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights Roundtable. Got Mitko and Dieted on here. Maybe somebody else will pop in while we're on our break there. So with that said, peace and love. Stay tuned.
Papa said, son, you gotta drive. The drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln. You heard the story of the hot rod race when the Fords and the Lincolns were setting the pace. That story's true, I'm here to say, 'cause I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up, and that Model A body makes it look like a pup. It's got 8 cylinders and use them all. Got overdrive, just won't stall. With 4 bow carbs and a dual exhaust and 4 limb gears, you can really get lost. Got safety tubes, but I ain't scared. The brakes are good, the tires fast. Pulled out of San Pedro late one night, and the moon and the stars were shining bright. We was driving up old Grapevine Hill, passing cars like they were standing still. All of a sudden, in a wink of an eye, a Cadillac sedan passed us by. I said, boys, that's a mark for me. By then the taillight was all you could see. Now the fellas all ribbed me for being behind, so I thought I'd make that Lincoln unwind. Took my foot off the gas, and man alive, I shoved it on down into overdrive. Well, I wound it up to 110. My speedometer said that I'd hit top end. My foot was glued like lead to the floor. That's all there is. There ain't no more. Now the boys all thought that I'd lost my sense, and them telephone poles looked like a picket fence. They said, slow down, I see spots. The lines on the road just look like dots. We took a corner, sideswiped the truck, and I crossed my fingers just for luck. My fenders was clicking the guardrail post, and the guy beside me was white as a ghost. Smoke was coming from out of the back when I started to gain on a Cadillac. I knew I could catch him and I thought I could pass. Don't you know by then we'd be low on gas. I had flames coming from out of the side. You can feel the tension, man, what a ride. I said, look out, boys, I got a license to fly. And that caddy pulled over and let us by. Now all of a sudden she started to knock it down, and the dip she started to rock. And I looked in the mirror, red light was blinking. The cops was after my hot rod Lincoln. Well, they arrested me and they put me in jail, and they called my pappy to throw my bail. And he said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
a yellow moon coming up to tonight, shining through the trees. Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze. Baby, get ready. Across the field where the creek turns back by the old stumble road, I'm gonna take you to a special place that nobody knows. Baby, get ready. Ooh, ooh.
You and me go fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars where the cool grass grows. Down by the river in the full moonlight, we'll be falling in love in the middle of the night, just moving slow.
Almost over and the summer's come and the days are getting long. I waited all winter for the time to be right just to take you along. Baby, get ready. And it don't matter if we sit forever and the fish don't bite. We'll jump in a river and cool ourselves from the heat of the night. Get ready. Ooh, ooh.
You and me go fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars where the cool grass grows. Down by the river in the full moonlight, we'll be falling in love in the middle of the night, just moving slow.
Street.
And you see the tears roll down my nose.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table number 90. We're getting close to that whole 100. I've been joined by my honorable knight Colt Diadin and my honorable knight Mitko there. You know, the whole deal about being awake to what's going on in the world, it's got a few pros and cons about it. One of the things that stands out the most to me is the fact that you get this sense of urgency, you know, that you know the world's a mess, and you know your time's a ticking here on Earth, and you want to just try to make things better for everybody out of a love for humanity. And so, with that said, we put together the Knights of the Round Table and Shaziz Mad Science and networks like Shake and Wake Radio and Wake Radio and No Borders Radio and We Roar Radio and all the different networks out there. And so it's a bunch of good people coming from all different nations, all different races and religions and backgrounds, political views and stuff like that, that are coming together and trying to speak common sense and work out solutions to problems in the world. So I would like to think that we're doing some good here with the Knights of the Round Table, and I would encourage anyone out there who is listening in to not just be a listener, to come in and be one of the honorary knights in the chat room, or, you know, join in on the actual conversation, be one of the honorable knights of the round table, sit at the table with all of your brothers and sisters around the world, and see if we can't together figure out ways to solve problems. You know, we've talked about so much stuff here today, and you know, it's been a lot of good conversations, a few laughs, and you know, a few concerns and such, but that's what it's all about. It's, you know, family sitting around the table and having some coffee together, and you know, we're doing something that normally we all wouldn't have been able to ever do. We would have never met each other had it not been for this particular network and other networks out there doing what we did. We kind of, everyone was seeking each other out, you know, looking for more like-minded individuals who really cared about the world and the state of the world, and basically trying to make the world community a better place. You know, it's a big task that stands before us as far as making the world a better place. But in my religious personal beliefs, you know, it falls down to this. You know, no man knows the time or the day, you know, that he would come like a thief in the night, you know, when you least expect it, you know, dad shows up in the house. You know, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, and or, you know, you even just think about it as far as a doomsday. You know, nobody knows when doomsday, when or if it'll ever even show up. Maybe this world will go on for thousands of years. But in the time that we're going to be sitting here waiting around for either the return of Jesus or the return or the showing up of doomsday planet X or whatever is going to come around and get us, you know, we got an opportunity to either make or break this world for each other. And so with that said, the ultimate goal of the Knights of the Round Table is to bring people to the table to try to make this world a better place while we have to live here, instead of, you know, just going with the flow and repeating the same old mistakes, you know, the lack of common sense that we see in our leaders of today, you know, from all nations. Even leaders of all the religions and churches and stuff like that, you know. It's kind of, you know, practice what you preach and that kind of thing, you know. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto yourself. You know, we when we sit back and we get all stoked up patriotically that we got to go over and we got to assault this other nation, you know, because they're a potential danger to our nation, we first have to understand that with that action of us going over there attacking other nations, there's a lot of consequence to it. There's a lot of results. You are not just going over there to swing around a few bombs and some bullets, you know, and the biggest baddest guy wins, and then the other guy just loses and submits to the system. What you're doing is you're going over there and you're destroying lives just like yours, you know, brothers and sisters around the world. You're taking families apart, and you're taking children and putting them homeless, and you're displacing entire groups of individuals to you know, refugee camps. You know, you're just totally uplifting or totally destroying entire nations at a time. And at the end of the day, what's it all about? Is it all about just the resources? Who has the oil? Who has the gold, the silver, the water? You know, if we use this beautiful world that we have properly, and we learn from nature, and we respect the nature and all that has been created for us, this amazing gift, as individuals, personally, each and every one of us being able to affect the entire world, infect or affect, either way you want to look at it, we have this capability. And so it all starts with you, the individual, that guy sitting on the couch. You know, the grass outside's not going to get mowed unless you go out and do it yourself. And, you know, so with that said, I'd like to hear the thoughts of the Knights and see what they think about that. What do you guys think? Don't everybody jump to the microphone at once. I wouldn't want nobody to chip a tooth.
Yeah. What do I think? I think that I shouldn't think so much.
It hurts sometimes. You ever notice how your head gets really hot after you've been thinking for a long time?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I got to go take like a little nap or just try to tune out. Just like go out and sit outside and meditate. Just cool down.
Well, there's a good solution to a problem right there. Meditation, you know, looking in within yourself. And there's another thing called grounding, where you take your shoes off and you go out there and stand in the grass and feel nature. You know, it's basically bringing yourself in touch with part of what you are. You know, you are nature.
Sometimes after I'm experimenting with the Tesla coil for an extended period of time, I go out and I do a little grounding just to make sure that I'm not storing up all that energy.
You're not a capacitor.
Yeah, I'm going to go and hug my wife and give her a big zap.
Well, in the alternative energy community, you know, there's so much that could be accomplished, you know. There's so many different incredible individuals out there with lots of ideas, wonderful ideas, man. I mean, we got friends all over the world. What do you think about that, Mitko?
Yeah, actually, when working with alternative energies, sometimes your mind is working against you. I mean, sometimes you just have to stop thinking about anything and just meditate, and the answer will come to you automatically.
Yeah, instead of overthinking things, that's where a lot of things go wrong, was people overthink it. Like, you know, if you put yourself in your head the laws of physics, and you are already under the mind set that certain things are not possible, then
you're going to restrict you.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not possible. You just made them not possible.
So that's how powerful your mind can actually be, you know. You can either make or break your success just by the way your attitude is and your own personal thoughts. If you don't believe it's possible, it's not going to be possible, you know. If you believe you're going to fail, then you are definitely going to fail. If you believe that you are going to succeed, you will succeed. It's your choice, you know.
Yep.
You know, maybe you don't have all the answers, but there's somebody out there that does, you know. Dieden's got some really good answers. I've learned a lot from him ever since we became friends. Mitko, I've learned a lot from him since we became friends. We kind of taught each other a bit of stuff that we didn't know about, or maybe they had the opportunity to research it, and then they shared that idea with me. And for that, I'm better off now than I ever was before they came onto the scene. So they've been a positive influence on my life. Just like I hope that I was a positive influence on somebody else's life out there. And to me, this is what it's all about. This makes the whole getting up early in the morning and stumbling to the computer and trying to get woke up so that you can put a show on. You know, if you heard me at the beginning of this show, it was a disaster. If my friend Dieden and Mitko hadn't showed up, I was on a sinking ship that the old king was going down for the count.
Yeah, well, I've definitely learned a lot from you guys, that's for sure. And even just a little ideas, or even just being in a commutative presence, you know, just like talking with each other, you know, you kind of sometimes you're down and it uplifts you a little bit. So I've enjoyed it immensely. Although my wife sometimes gets a little upset with me because I'm in the garage talking to a box and not her.
Well, you should bring your wife and have her join. We need more dames at the Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah, I told her, but she's sleeping. She's always trying to sleep and get as much sleep as she can. She's, you know, always working when she's not sleeping. So,
well,
I try to let her rest, and then you know when the kids wake up, and usually right around when we're wrapping up, and then I can. Take care of the kids for a little bit and let her get a little extra sleep.
I would say make her the center of your universe and you guys will work out just fine. Every once in a while, just for no reason whatsoever, drop a flower down there next to her when she wakes up. That'll be the first thing she sees during the day, you know, and that'll start her day off real well. So, you know, that's a little bit of love advice from an old geezer over here.
Words of wisdom.
Yeah, I've kept my marriage together by making my wife the center of my world, and, you know, we kind of 50-50 things, you know, so if I'm spending too much time on the computer, I'll always keep it in my mind that, you know, I'm cheating her if I don't go spend some time with her, so I try to balance things out and make her, you know, the center of my world, let her know that, you know, I really care about her, so... You know, just take advice from an old mad science guy with crazy old hair. You know,
I've been advice taken. Thank you, I appreciate that.
I've been down a road or two. Anyway, we got a lot of things that we can teach one another, and the folks out there listening in. You know, if you believe in what it is that we're talking about and you like what you're hearing, go tell your friends about it. Like I said, I've said this a million times. You don't have to come and listen to Shaziz Radio. You can listen to Awake Radio or go over to No Borders and hang out in their chat rooms and meet some good folks over there. And, you know, Shake and Wake Radio, all these different individuals out here. It's just about... getting out there networking with really good folks from all over the world, man. You're going to get a bit of culture that you would have never otherwise got. You know, talking to Australians is different than talking to Irish folks and people from Russia and Canada, you know, different accents, you know. I talk like an old hillbilly, man. I sound like some crazy wild-eyed redneck, but, you know, that's... basically my general vicinity, you know. This is how people talk around where I'm at.
That's what makes you unique.
Yeah. And, you know, I love it. It's just, it's amazing to be able to talk to people clear across the world and share brilliant ideas back and forth. You know, we can make our world a better place. You know, even like I said, and like Dieden said, you know, like that grain of sand that we talk about, even that one little tiny grain of sand affects the entire world, because if that one little grain of sand isn't there, something is different in the world of all the other grains of sand out there. And so, since we actually have the capability of getting up, walking around, and interacting with the world, and changing the world as we go, I mean, it's just amazing. What do you guys think?
Oh yeah, life is beautiful when you take the time to just let it do its thing.
Yeah, go.
Yeah, like the domino effect.
Yeah.
There you go. Exactly. tip that first domino over and they're all going down. So it's just like, you know, the whole we're all in the same boat thing, you know, we are. We're on this beautiful rock flying through space and God knows which direction and where we're going to end up. But wherever we do end up, guess what? We're all going to end up there together, you know. You'll either be 6 foot under the dirt when we get there, or you'll be standing up there witnessing the either impending apocalypse or the impending beauty of some amazing miracle together. We're all going to be there together when we finally get down this road. And so while we're going down this road, instead of making it bad for all of us, let's try to make it good for all of us. You know, when you go to the picnic, don't just show up and eat all the food. Bring some food with you. Bring some love. Bring some happiness. Some games or something, you know. Bring something to the table to share with your brothers and sisters around the world. Because, you know, this ride that we're on, dude, it could either be really miserable or it could be really spectacular, you know. Am I wrong?
No. Yeah, huh? Some people don't like roller coaster rides, though.
Yeah, well, some people get sick on roller coaster rides, but some people enjoy it.
Yep.
You know, if you don't... Go ahead, Nico.
Depends on the perspective.
Yeah. If you don't like the roller coaster ride, then sit down at the picnic table and keep the food warm for people whenever they get off. And those who aren't green when they get off will have dinner with you, and those who are green, you know, you'll show them to the trash can and they can take care of business. You know, it's just as simple as that. You know, what you do on your daily life is going to make the difference to somebody's day. You know, somebody thought enough to bring some napkins to the picnic so everybody isn't sitting around with food all over their face. But, you know, either way, that's the difference, you know, the difference between being prepared for anything, you know, a natural disaster. You know, natural disaster gets... I thought about it this one time, and I was standing there when everybody would start telling me about these apocalyptic things going on in the world. And I said, if I had to make it from point A to point B with just what I had in my pocket, nothing more, just what I carried on my own person, how would I fare? I pulled out my comb, I pulled out my wallet, and I pulled out my keys, and I dropped them on the table, and I said, I'm screwed. You know, so I started filling up my pockets with things that I might need. You know, if I'm out to dinner, I might need some toothpicks. So I got me a little toothpick container, put it in my pocket, you know. I got me some of those multi-purpose tools with screwdrivers and pliers and all that. Yeah. Now, my pockets are so full of junk that I got an extra 20 pounds at least on me, you know, that I carry around on a daily basis because my pockets are just cram packed full of junk. And then I get in the middle of the night after work and everything, and I sit down at the coffee table and I start unloading my pocket, and I'm like, man, why am I so freaking tired all the time? And then I look at this pile that's on the table and I said, my God, no wonder I'm so tired. Look at all this crap I carry in my pockets.
Yeah, but look at the good side. You are exercising all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And if the apocalypse ever shows up, I got some MacGyver tools in my pocket. You know, I'll be standing there and somebody will like, man, I wish I had some electrical tape. I said, hold on, I'll pull it out of my pocket. I got some electrical tape. He said, man, you got, like, what don't you have in your pocket? And I said, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've inventoried. Well, I got nuts, bolts, screws, wires.
If a giant, massive tidal wave comes anyway, you just shed your coat and you'll be able to run faster than anybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I could be the fastest streaker on the planet if I didn't have all this.
Just be the pale blur.
Yeah, there'd be this white glow running by. What the heck was that? Oh, man. But, you know, when I think back about it and I think about being prepared and all that kind of stuff, you know, you got to have a little common sense. If you're going to we do this kind of deal. We go out and we stock up on canned goods and all that kind of stuff, and we don't take it to the extremes as if we're hoarding or anything like that. What we do is every so often our kids have to, you know, they find themselves on hard times and they need some extra groceries. And so we will cycle out older stuff and take it to them and then bring fresh stuff in at all times. And so we kind of got like a little pantry going on that if there's somebody in the neighborhood that's falling on hard times, we can take them some food and get them by to their next payday or whatever, or our kids, either way, you know, whatever. But we always got something on hand that just in case of an emergency, you know, we're not going to be like, you know, during the apocalypse trying to go to the grocery store and getting beat up for trying to. It was funny, I seen that video on that commercial on TV where your dad gets punched by somebody for a can of soup. I don't know if you've ever seen that commercial, but it's like a direct TV commercial, and the guy's talking, he goes through all this stuff like you get bored and then you go out and you go hang gliding, and then your hang glider crashes into the power grid, which causes a blackout, and then there causes riots, and then your dad gets punched for a can of soup during the riot, you know. That's that domino effect we were talking about. But either way, I don't have to go to the grocery store. If something goes awry, we can stay home and, you know, let everybody else do what they got to do out there. And if anybody needs help, they always know that there's an open door for them here. So, you know, that's kind of how we do our stuff as far as preparing for whatever could happen, you know. You could never totally 100% prepare for everything under the sun. It's just not financially feasible, at least not for us at this point in time.
We don't prepare too much at our place, except for just, you know, the basics of like some food and water lasts a couple of days. But we have several places, family that are out of the city that aren't too far of a drive or a walk, and we can always head out there, and they grow their own food and all that kind of stuff. Farming circumstance, so.
Yeah, farming communities are wonderful places to live because farmers take care of their neighbors, and I've seen this many times. There were a few episodes where we'd hear a car or a truck pull up, and before we got to the door, all we would see is the taillights heading out, and there would be this huge basket full of food and fruits and stuff like that around Christmas time. They didn't want no credit. They just come over, drop it off at the door, and took off, you know. And to me, I thought, you know, that is just so amazing that they did that, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's even in the towns, if you guys live inside of, you know, small towns or even, you know, communities, the suburbs, or even in the city, you know, you could still build a network of people like that in your own neighborhood. You can look over at your brother across the fence, and instead of complaining about his yard being too tall or whatever, go over and give him a hand. You might make a friend, you know.
Yeah.
That's how
that's
it goes.
The real
man.
Value of money is just the giving your time and your frequency.
Yeah, you don't have to pay it forward with money. You can pay it forward with a smile, man.
Yeah.
And love. I mean, love is like it's like a never-ending thing. You can love your neighbors and love all your neighbors, love all your friends, love every single person on the planet, and you just never seem to run out of love. If that's what your heart is made up of, love, man, you could spend it on a daily basis as if it was going out of style. You know, just slinging love in every direction, and that's like. Instead of throwing positive pebbles in a pond, you're throwing them like buckshot, you know, tons of them at a time, you know. Somebody's going to get pelted.
With the shotgun of love.
Yeah, there you go. Throwing a big old boulder in there. Instead of sending out a pebble at a time, you throw a boulder full of love out there, you know. Some people like, dude, you love people too much.
Did you say interesting
bricks? Yeah, bricks.
It's like that statement. Love is like a candle, and you can go around and light that one candle, light thousands of other candles, millions of other candles, and your candle will never diminish in its light. It'll just continue to emanate the same amount.
Yeah, and that movie that I saw that I talked about on a show a couple times back, the movie Pay It Forward, where that little boy did that deal, and then at the end of the end of the movie, he passed away, and then all the people from...
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, you just spoiled it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Got it.
I'm kidding. I've seen it. But,
oh.
But there might be people there who haven't.
But anyway, what... affected me the most about that entire movie wasn't what the boy did. It wasn't the fact that he passed away or anything like that. It was at the end of this whole deal, because I've said this at funerals, family funerals all the time. It shouldn't take a tragedy to bring a family together. A family, you know, should be stay together, you know, throughout their entire life and help one another. But 9 times out of 10 with all of society or families in general, it usually takes a massive tragedy to bring a family together. But when you finally see that final outcome of that family coming together, when you watch the last portion of this movie and you see all them candles coming to a candlelight vigil in honor of what this boy did, it is so overwhelming and so amazing to see all the candles from the entire city all over the place. I mean, just thousands and thousands and thousands of people bringing candles together in the one place. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just so amazing, and this is what I feel like every time we get on the Knights of the Round Table and we do what it is that we do here. I feel that community coming together, you know.
Yeah.
And
love.
If we could just spread that far and wide and have all communities coming together, could you imagine the world that we could actually live in if people really, really took in consideration and gave even an ounce of what they could give to their neighbors? It would be amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not beyond the realms of possibility, you know. I still believe in the dream, you know. The ultimate utopia, okay, maybe it's the unachievable, but...
At least try.
Yeah.
Do our best.
If we do...
Utopia may not be possible, but there's no sense in giving up and just saying, oh, well... You know, this is it. I'm just gonna live for myself, and you know,
yeah.
If you live like that, then you really have no excuse to complain about anything ever, because you're basically just draining it, right? So
yeah, if you sit around and you complain about the world and in general what's going on out there, and you haven't done anything towards making it any better, then you're just complaining. You haven't done anything.
Yep.
Wow, time's really flown here, man. We're like down to the last, 9 minutes of the show there?
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
Well, I think it's been an inspiring show. Thank you guys for coming in and saving old King Shaziz the Terrible, who rules with an iron fist. And don't you forget it. You guys saved my life, man. I was going down.
You would have been fine.
Well, maybe I might have caught my second wind, but you know, when you're trying to pick out words, inspirational words to, you know, to uplift people, you know, and you're too distracted on all the crazy things like Google and their constant ways that they're trying to basically conquer the world of the internet or whatever, it gets frustrating, because you always constantly, you get used to something, Facebook changes, you get used to it, YouTube changes, everything changes, it's going to continuous change, and they always want you to update with software that you know doggone good and well is going to spy on you, so, ugh.
The best adaptable to change. There's no better way than just to be happy with what you got.
Well, all I can say is everybody get a pork and bean can and lots of wire, and we will stretch them from here to Bulgaria, to Spain, to Ireland, to Australia, to Canada, and we will all keep our wires tight and talk to each other. Hello, can you hear me?
That'd be a little bit of a delay.
Yeah. Somebody gets clotheslined by our wire all stretched out or trips over it, and then they'll be complaining.
Yeah.
With every plan, there's a flaw.
The system will go down, too.
good.
Yeah, somebody with wire cutters. The the men in black take wire cutters and snip the transmission. All right. Well, with that said, let's go ahead and wrap it up. We got a couple nights to have their last say here before we go out of here. So, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Sure.
I appreciate being on here and talking with you guys. It's always a humbling experience, and I'm quite fortunate to have friends like you guys, even though we've never met in person. Well, maybe one day if I get the resources.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, and also I'm excited because the cultist is telling me that he's going to go do his experiment today, so I'm excited to see that if that goes down, hopefully a stray bolt of lightning. Hopefully Zeus is looking down on him, and taking a break today. Fire any lightning bolts down.
Well, I hope whatever happens, he gets it on video.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. And so anybody out there should definitely check that out if it's going to go down today. That's pretty much it.
Yes.
All I got.
Support your local researchers, folks, because they're out there trying to do the work to benefit humanity. What about you, Mikko?
Yeah, just prepare for the worst, hope for the best, and that's it.
That's really good advice.
The future is promising, but if shit goes down, you better be prepared.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking too. Just be ready for whatever comes your way, man. And by networking with all the people out there, you always have somebody that you can fall back on. It's kind of like that. I know it sounds corny, but it's kind of like that song, Lean On Me. When times are hard, you got your friends. And when they're good, you got your friends. So either way, you can't lose by making a new friend. And these networks are a good place to do it. So tell your friends out there on all your social networks. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the Knights of the Round Table number 90. Yay! We're getting close to 100. We got to have a bash on 100.
All right.
So with that said, everybody out there, take care. Stay tuned for the next Knights of the Round Table. Go check out Cultus's stuff out there. And if you got the opportunity to help support one of your local alternative energy researchers or even somebody far distant away, if you got the resources, help them out because they're trying to do something for you as well. So with that said, peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system. Help, help, I'm being repressed.
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Says the terrible, and the knights of the round table.